of precision pushes the boundaries for modern sporting rifle builds and machines receivers from custom forgings for added strength and durability. Aero Precision delivers top quality American-made products at an affordable price. AeroPrecisionUSA.com.
All right, welcome back to Gun Talk. I'm Tom Gresham. Before we get to our guest, I do want to do a quick follow-up. We had a caller a few minutes ago, Michael in Shreveport, and he's dyslexic and is having trouble filling out the paperwork to purchase a firearm, and he's saying the stores are saying they can't help him with that. Well, Michelle threw a thought out to us here in the studio, and she was, as always, unfortunately, correct. And then Chad Winkler, our bud down at Boondocks Academy, sends me the quote from the ATF regs, and he says, yeah, that's right. Here's the quote, and here's how a person with dyslexia can buy a gun, fill out the form. Quote, if the buyer or transferee is unable to read and or write the answers other than the signature, may be written on the form by another person excluding the seller. Two persons, not directly involved in the firearms transaction, excluding, for example, the licensee and employees of the licensee, must sign as witnesses to the buyer's answers and signatures. So you bring two people with you to the store. The store people cannot help you fill out the form, and they can help you fill it out, and then they have to sign as witnesses to the buyer's answers and signature. And if anybody needs a quote on that or reference, it's 27 CFR 478.21. Thank you, Chad. I appreciate that. Thank you, Michelle. Good info. And for our caller, Michael, who is trying to buy a gun and struggling with a dyslexia on that, that's your answer, and that will work for you. All right. Appreciate it. That's what I love about this. We have this community of people who help each other. And, you know, I can't know all this stuff and don't pretend to. But I do know a lot of folks out there, that means you, the listeners, who know this stuff, and you help me out. So I sure appreciate that. All right, very good. All right, speaking of communities and people we work with and people who know stuff, we're joined right now by Ashley Lubinsky. Of course, she is one of the most knowledgeable and top consultants when it comes to firearms history in the country. And Ashley, you're up to something new these days, aren't you?
Yeah, a lot of new things, actually, but it's been kind of exciting for the people that don't know me. I used to run the Cody Firearms Museum in Wyoming, and when I stepped back to consult full-time, COVID hit museums and still is hitting museums really hard, mm-hmm. and so a lot of my clients ended up being lawyers, law firms, and, you know, television networks, and I'm really happy that museums are really starting to pick back up and they're able to do a lot of really cool projects. So I'm working on two projects right now that are really interesting. One is actually a return to a project that I worked on 6 years ago, which is there is a Matthew Browning collection of firearms up in Great Falls, Montana. So I'm helping with that. And then I'm also helping with a rebuild, reimagining of the L.A. Police Museum in Pasadena.
Now, Matthew Browning, that was John Browning's brother, right?
Correct. He was the only full brother of John Browning. He had lots of half-siblings,
right?
Because they were Mormon.
He was kind of the business side of the whole deal, where John was the inventor. Is that a fair representation?
Well, he did do a lot of the business-facing parts of the company, but he did also have his name on a lot of patents. So people don't realize when you look at John Browning patents, his brother's name is on a lot of them as well.
Oh, okay.
And it was actually John Matthew and then their half-brother, Jonathan E., who went by Ed Browning, who did a lot of the work in the shop. So John would have a lot of the ideas. He didn't have all the ideas, but a lot of them. Matthew would figure out how to sell them, and Ed actually assembled a lot of the prototypes that you see associated with John Browning.
Cool stuff. Okay. Let me ask you a question here. What is it about guns that we really like the history of, or is it that we like history, and so we explore history through firearms?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, it's probably a little bit of both. You know, for me, you know, as someone who didn't grow up around firearms, I've always been really interested in the stories behind those firearms. But then, you know, when I was running the Cody Firearms Museum, there are a lot of people who are firearms enthusiasts first, and then they get really drawn into the history. So I just think it's two different ways to get interested in the same thing. And with the other museum I'm working with, you know, it's kind of interesting because it's a, you know, the LA Police Museum. And so a lot of their artifacts come from the, you know, LA Police or comes from the DA's office. And so you can add another level of interest because a lot of their artifacts are associated with really famous, infamous, if you will, shootout crimes.
Oh, yeah. The guns of gangsters, the guns of famous cases that you've heard about, that they've made movies about. And then you go, oh, that's the guns that were used by that infamous person. So, you know, and that kind of brings you into the whole guns and pop culture and history and movies and TV and all the rest of it.
Oh, for sure. And you know, it was really interesting to me the first time I went to the LA Police Museum, which was back in June or July. You know, they have so many things that you know, have heard about. They've got a lot of artifacts associated with Charles Manson and, you know, the murders associated with the Manson family. As someone who studied armed feminism and armed activism in the 60s, 70s, they have Patty Hearst's firearms as well. And they also have the North Hollywood shootout guns, as well as the guns, gear, police car, perp car. And they randomly have O.J. Simpson, the helicopter that flew over O.J. Simpson's Bronco.
Holy cow.
In their collection. So it's really interesting because you get those things that you associate. You know, everyone watches, you know, Netflix true crime. I mean, you get so many of the things that are, you know, real, very dark parts of our history. And you can see it on pop culture. And then they also have some artifacts that are associated with the pop culture related to those very real cases.
Huh. Very interesting. And as you're describing that, I was remembering when I went through the NYPD training facility, the firearms facility, and they had all these guns. It's not a museum that's open to the public, but it should be, because they've confiscated all these incredible guns. And they said, but the cops there who really know guns, they're required to destroy the guns, except they pull out the really good ones and the important ones. And they put them to the side and they say, we're going to hold these on just for, quote unquote, research, because they can't stand to see them destroyed.
Yeah. We've had that when I was with Cody. I mean, we would get phone calls from police departments around the country that during, you know, the different programs where people would come and bring their firearms in, or people were just kind of forfeiting their firearms, where they would see something that needed to be destroyed and they would give us a call and be like, we feel like this shouldn't be destroyed. You know, is this something that you guys would want to take into the collection? And I know Danny was really interested in just kind of taking some of that stuff in general, because that's a part of, you know, American, you know, what will become American firearms history, but also, you know, current culture with firearms. And so even if it's not, you know, something that we necessarily need, you know, like another Smith & Wesson J-frame revolver, but if it came from a police department, you know, that in association with something is really interesting to a museum.
Interesting. All right, so tell me about this new thing that you and Mark are doing. What is the gun code?
Oh, so it's so the gun code, just it was just me. I started it years ago when I was with when I was still with the Firearms Museum. They were very great to me. They let me continue to do consulting around the country. You know, it was one of those things that it helped, you know, kind of bolster my reputation, but then it also helped the museum's reputation as well, because we were kind of all over the country helping out people. And so when I moved to Arizona, I got a new LLC, still use the name Gun Code, and I added Mark to it because he's starting to do a little bit of industry consulting in addition to his job as president of sales of Ammo Inc. And so I brought him into it.
All right. I'm not going to steal it from you. I'm going to let you introduce. You tell people who your husband is.
Oh, my husband's Mark Hanisch. He is president of sales for Ammo Incorporated, which is a company that started out pretty small in Arizona. And they were really known for their Streak ammunition, which is a one-way photoluminescent. So it's a tracer with no fire. And I always describe it like a glow ring. It's kind of how it works.
Right.
But they've grown. They actually ended up acquiring GunBroker, I think back in the spring. And so they went from this small kind of niche company to a very, very large,
publicly traded, very large
company. And then he's also a pro shooter, pro three gunner. People would probably know him from Three Gun Nation.
And he's also the guy who started the whole concept of the Guntry Club when he created the Scottsdale Gun Club.
That is true, too. See, you know him better than me.
Oh, well, yeah, we've done an awful lot of video with Mark over the last 20 years or so. And so when you guys got together and got married, I'm thinking, this is like the greatest combination of gun people I know.
Well, see, that's why we decided to put our heads together. And you know, we can ultimately, right now, you know, I'm doing, you know, 95% of the consulting right now. But, you know, as he kind of works for different companies and that kind of thing, he's available for him. So I can do the history side of everything and he can handle the rest.
What is the future of gun museums? Because I know there's always that pressure from somewhere of saying, oh, we shouldn't be glorifying guns.
The future of gun museums, that's a good question. I mean, what's interesting about the museum field in general is that they tend to not have a lot of people that are focused in firearms. So you get a weird kind of either someone who, actually this is true, you go to a lot of museums and like the janitor or a volunteer that's a retired veteran or retired law enforcement ends up working more with the gun collection than actual museum professionals because there's just like, you know, you're either a museum professional that doesn't know about guns or a gun person that doesn't know about museums. And so we try to encourage more and more people to get both sides of it. But what's interesting about guns in museums in general is they tend to be the most publicly popular exhibits within larger museums. And that's, you know, the Met in New Chicago or Colonial Williamsburg. A lot of the curators will tell you that, especially when they do some survey work, that it's incredibly popular despite the fact that really nobody, you know, other than maybe a few people, know about it within the organizations. And so as far as the popularity with the public goes, I think that they're still going to become immensely popular. I think it's just kind of an interesting changing point. If you guys have been to the New Cody Firearms Museum, we very much straddle the world between the enthusiast and then someone who doesn't know anything.
Right.
And I think that it would benefit a lot of gun museums to be able to tailor to people who don't know about guns that are maybe being, you know, dragged along, you know, with someone who wants to go see the gun museum, but being able to be an area for dialogue and provide contacts and provide, you know, education and safety information, I think is really important for gun museums moving in to get, you know, not just, you know, the current gun people interested in the museum, but then also, you know, people who may never encounter guns in their lives or, you know, may only know what they know from TV.
Exactly right. Ashley, thank you for bringing us up to speed with what you're doing. Is there anything else we need to know before we hit to our break here?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. I will look forward to seeing you guys whenever the next thing is, possibly, maybe, probably at the SHOT Show in Vegas.
Fingers crossed.
All righty. Take care. All right. Ashley Lubinsky, yep. You can see why she is so good at what she does. Lots of energy and incredible knowledge base about the history of firearms. Yeah, cool gun museums. I do love the Cody Museum, but there are others out there. Have you been to a museum where you went, oh, cool, they got a gun display? Like to know about that one. 866-TALK-GUN. Now we're open lines.
A passion for shooting and hunting has driven product innovation at Hodgson Powder Company since 1947. Innovations like black powder substitutes, muzzle-loading pellets, and smokeless powder features like anti-copper fouling agents or temperature insensitivity. A family business from the beginning, Hodgson Powder Company is the largest U.S. supplier of smokeless, black powder, and black powder substitute propellants, and the leader in reloading data for enthusiasts and newcomers alike through the Reloading Data Center. Hodgson Powder Company, the gunpowder people.
Visit guntalk.com/win to enter GunTalk's September Silence Giveaway. One grand prize winner takes home the CVA Cascade bolt-action rifle in 7mm/8, the Silencer Central Banish 30 suppressor, and $500 True Timber gift card. One first prize winner gets a $500 gift card to spend at truetimber.com. Enter now through September 30th at guntalk.com/win.
The Smith & Wesson M&P 380 Shield Easy Pistol revolutionized personal protection with its easy-to-use design. Now, enter the M&P Shield Easy in 9mm. Built for personal and home protection, the Smith & Wesson M&P 9 Shield Easy Pistol features the same easy-to-rack, easy-to-load, and easy-to-shoot design of the M&P Shield Easy series. Available at a retailer near you. Find out more at smith-wesson.com.
continues. The gun buying, that is. Let's see. Last month, August 2021, second best record of all time for gun sales. Americans bought more than 1.3 million guns in August. That's according to an industry analysis of the FBI background checks released on Wednesday of this past week. It makes this past month the second best August on record for gun sales. Of course, last year, 2020 being the best. But this one wasn't very much short of that. What does that mean? 1.3 million guns, what is that, 12 million guns, more than that. 15 million guns sold in a year. I think, get the tea leaves going here. I think what it means is this actually is the new normal. Last year we kept saying this is not the new normal. This is just a thing. This is a pandemic-created thing. This is a thing that happened because of the riots, the Antifa BLM, very televised, popular, talked about on the news, riots where buildings are burning, people are getting hurt, riots are happening. The defund the police movement was certainly a big part of that. People said, oh, if you're going to cut back on the police, we're going to increase our efforts to take care of ourselves. We will do that by buying guns. All that continues, and that is certainly true, and those are factors, but maybe, just maybe, there's something else going on here. And that's when crime goes up, people say, I must take care of myself. We must take care of ourselves. And as we look at these reports out of Chicago and other places of crime increasing, for whatever reason, and there are many thoughts about that, obviously, clearly, gun availability and gun laws are not part of that because Chicago has all the gun control laws that the gun ban people would like the rest of us to have. They don't work there. Well, that's because they don't work anywhere, but that's a whole different issue. So what's driving the sales of guns? People wanting to take care of themselves. If I had to guess, I would bet that 90% of firearms purchased are for self-defense. And then, the rest of them are competition, recreation. And obviously, there's a lot of crossover, clearly. Hunting, clearly, a bunch there. But with this, I was going to say increase, but I'm not sure it's an increase now. If it continues year after year, is it really an increase or is it just the normal is higher than it used to be? Well, one of the things that's happened is that gun manufacturers have definitely increased production. They're getting more guns out the door. They figured out how to be more efficient. Ammo makers, a little bit less so, although Remington is now online turning out millions of rounds, probably millions of rounds a day. I don't know that, but I'm guessing. And that's helping tremendously because they were out of the picture for a while during the bankruptcy and the purchase and everything else. And Vista, which is Federal Cartridge, et cetera, bought Remington and they're cranking out ammo. So that's helping. We are seeing ammo, but not nearly enough. And the prices have come down, but again, not nearly enough. Will they ever go back to where they were? I don't know. My gut says possibly not. I don't know. Just, it's an interesting time. And I think it's becoming the new normal. Whatever that means, whatever that is, of just lots of people buying guns. So what are the ramifications of that? A lot of these people are first-time gun buyers. Obviously, we've got a lot of people who own guns who are still buying guns. But we have an awful lot of first-time gun buyers. I think there's opportunity there. I think there's business opportunity in terms of gun ranges, people starting, building gun ranges, especially indoor ranges, especially in cities where it's convenient for people to get to so they don't have to drive an hour out of town to go to an outdoor range. I think there's opportunity there for those of us who think that training and safety is important to offer classes somehow. What I don't know yet, and this is where we need smart people, creative people to think about this, is how do we find them? How do we reach out to them? And how do we make it attractive for them to go take some kind of lesson, some kind of training? And don't get me wrong, I am not advocating mandatory training. I think everybody should have it. But the problem, here's the problem with mandatory training is they say, okay, you must get this or you can't own a gun. Mandatory training requirements quickly become ways of restricting people from owning guns. It is a method by which the gun ban concept, the extremists on the gun ban side of things say, oh, we can require training. And then we can make the training a bit more onerous. We can say it's not a 2-hour class, it's an 8-hour class. Oh, that's not going to be enough. We're going to make it a 16-hour class. Now you have to come for 2 days. And it's not a $25 class, it's a $200 class. So now it's going to take 2 days and $200. And a lot of people are going to say, well, I just can't do that. Oh, well, if you can't do that, you can't own a gun. And therein lies the problem with mandatory training. It becomes a tool for the gun ban industry. But spinning back from that, how do we, responsible gun owners who want to have pretty much all gun owners be responsible and safe and knowledgeable, how do we reach out? How do we find them? How do we set this up? How do we structure it? There's got to be a way. I'm just a team of one over here. Oh, but wait, we have all of you out there. So we got this really big team. So I'm looking for ideas. How about it, team? How do we pull this off? Millions more gun owners. How are we going to reach it? 866-TALK-GUN. Gun Talk will return. I just think about this whole deal of 1.3 million guns being sold last month, more than 12 million a year. And what does that mean? Well, one of the things it means is that Americans are rejecting Joe Biden's gun control concepts. Where he's saying we want to make it more difficult for you to buy guns, where he's saying we want to ban certain guns, where he's saying we're going to block the importation of ammunition and guns into the country, where he's saying we're going to sick the State Department on gun imports and manufacturers overseas bringing guns in, and also now saying we're going to revisit the whole arms training treaty, that is, the ATT. Americans are going, really? I'm going to go buy a gun. You do what you got to do, Joe. I'm going to go buy a gun. Actually, we're going to buy 2 guns. Well, you know, as long as we're there, let's buy 3 guns. I think that's what that means. 866-TALK-GUN. This is Gun Talk. If you just arrived here, I'm Tom Gresham. You can give me a call if you agree or disagree. Doesn't matter. If you disagree, we'll move to the front of the line, and you can have the floor and tell me why you think I'm wrong. I'll let you have the floor for a while. And then, you know, I'm not going to shout you down or cut you off as long as we can have a civil conversation. I'm going to ask you some questions. But that's only fair. You get to support your side. I'll support my side. We'll see where it ends up. 866-TALK-GUN. We'll get you in there. Jim's called in out of Palmer, Alaska. He's on 2. Hey, Jim, what you looking for?
Well, Tom, I heard your conversation with a fellow that had cataract surgery.
Right.
And I haven't had that. I've got pretty good vision, but it's old-timers long range. So without reading glasses or anything, the front sight of my pistola is pretty blurry.
Yeah.
So I had an old pair of 125 readers, and
right,
the sight is great, and it's low power enough that it doesn't mess with long range vision either.
Okay.
Or the long range focus. So I was wanting to know, can you recommend somebody that makes safety glasses that have that kind of magnification, because I'm not satisfied, you know, with reading glasses as far as safety glasses are concerned.
Boy, have I got a deal for you. Now, you can have somebody make some glasses for you that'll cost $100 or more. Or for $20, I can take care of that for you. Actually, $15. How's that? Even better.
Well, yeah.
I'm looking right now on Amazon. There's a product called Optics 2020, OPTX. OPTX 20/20. And these are those stick-on bifocals. And you can get them in whatever power diopter you want. So you get these stick-on bifocals. They're plastic. And here's what I do. Are you shooting pistols primarily?
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem I have. Yeah.
All right. This is like the best deal ever. Here's what I do. I am left-eye dominant. So I work with my left eye. I take the shooting glasses. You get two of these bifocals. I only need one of them, because you're only going to use them in the dominant eye. And instead of putting it down at the bottom of whatever shooting glasses you're using, put it at the top, the inside top corner. And they literally put a drop of water on the inside of your lens. You stick this on, and when it dries, this thing is just stuck on there. And so you're looking through your shooting glasses, just regular, and you can see distance. And then when you put your pistol up, you just drop your nose ever so slightly. That lens that's over your shooting eye, that one, it pops in and your sight becomes brilliantly sharp.
Huh.
You can buy a pair of these for $15 off Amazon. Optics, it's OPTX 2020. You can probably find them in your local CVS, Walgreens, or whatever else place, Walmart for that matter.
Yeah, well, I've got a couple of books I was going to get from, so I might as well throw that in, too.
Yeah, for $15, how can you go wrong, right?
Exactly.
Well,
all right,
try
well,
it and let me know what
that.
You think.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
You bet. All right, take care. Bob's with us in Tulsa on line 5. Hey, Bob, thanks for your patience. What's on your mind, sir?
Well, I'm primarily a pistol kind of guy. I'm a pistol instructor. I've called in before. Love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
Picked up a .30-06. It's a Mossberg Patriot. And, of course, you know, it doesn't come with any sights or anything. So I'm looking at scopes. I'm new to scopes. I was in the military. I know the M16. I can hit 250-meter targets pretty good with the iron scopes, 50-50 mm-hmm. on the 300. However, I don't know anything about scopes, and I'm looking – I don't want to spend hundreds of dollars just to find out that I bought a bad one. Any suggestions?
Yeah, sure. Let's start off with this. What are you going to do with this .30-06? Is this for deer hunting?
No, I don't actually hunt. I bought it because I could. And I got a UPenn number. I got a VAF, and they still delayed me on the thing, but they called back and they gave me the approval. So, okay. You know, UPenn's not always about. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Probably pass it to my son.
Okay. All right. Okay. Two or three thoughts I want to give you quickly. This is your quick primer on optics, on scopes. You can find stuff for under $100. Don't do that. Probably be looking at somewhere between $200 and $400. You could spend $2,000 on a scope, but you don't have to. For instance, the folks at Crimson Trace now are making some really good scopes. The folks at SIG are making some really good scopes. The two things I would tell you is don't buy too much magnification, because there's a tendency to say, "Oh, I'll get the big powerful one, one that goes up to 24 power." That's very specialized. Harder to use, harder to see through. What I would do is I'd be looking at a 3-9 variable. It goes from 3 power magnification to 9. Get a 3-9 variable. And the other thing, and this is where it's really going to pay off for you, is when you need a set of bases and scope rings.
Right.
Get the lowest scope rings you can get, because they'll come like in low, medium, and high. And that's where we go into for the scope. Don't get a scope with a really big front bell. That's called the objective lens, because it's the part of the lens that's closer to the object being viewed. And you can get them that have a 50-millimeter tube. Well, that's kind of big. And what that means is you have to mount the scope higher to clear the barrel. I like 40-millimeter objective lenses. Then I can use low rings. and that makes the rifle faster. When you put it up to your shoulder, you will be looking through the scope, because ideally, the way you want to set it up is you can close your eyes, put the rifle to your scope, or rather to the, your shoulder. So you close your eyes, put the rifle up to, onto your shoulder, and then open your eyes, and you should be looking right through it. You shouldn't have to move your head around, lift it up, or move it around. And when you have that set up, that's fast and comfortable. So a 3-9 variable from a good company, you know, SIG, Crimson Trace, oh my gosh, Lupo Bushnell, any of the, a lot of good ones out there. Simple. At some point, you may decide you want something else, but if you start out this way, it will honestly take care of about 95% of anything you're ever going to want to do. And but the low scope rings, to me, are the thing that people really miss, and it's really going to make that rifle more shootable for you. I wish you luck with it, and when you get it and you shoot it, give me a call back and give us a range report on it. We appreciate that. Appreciate the call, sir. Got to run to the break because they're running the music all on top of me because, well, that's because I'm late again. 866-TALK-GUN.
Before computers, before engines and automobiles and roads, before all of this, there was the land. A great ocean of land with mountains black as night, standing guard over all that is and was and forever will be. This is the Black Hills of South Dakota. The place that made the people who make the best ammo on earth.
Visit black-hills.com for more information.
Your gun rights are under attack as never before. Joe Biden's administration has promised to rip away your constitutional rights, making good on the promises they made to the gun ban lobby. It's time to get off the sidelines and get in the fight. The Second Amendment Foundation's actions in dozens of landmark lawsuits have pushed back these gun grabs, but we need your help. Join and support the Second Amendment Foundation. Go to saf.org. That's saf.org.
The Ruger Max 9 is a micro-sized striker-fired 9mm pistol offering 12+1 capacity and a high-visibility tritium fiber day-night front sight. The Ruger Max 9 is optic-ready for direct mounting of co-witness J-point and shield pattern micro red dot sights. Available in three different models, manual safety, state compliant, and pro. The Ruger Max 9 is your next handgun. Find out more at Ruger.com/Max9.
Back with you. We were just talking about picking out a rifle or getting it set up and everything else. And, well, you may be able to get yourself a brand new rifle for nothing. Free. Yeah, we're giving away stuff again. It's September, so we have a new giveaway going this month. Yes, indeed. Let's see. If you go to guntalk.com/win, that's W-I-N, you can enter for a chance to win. The grand prize is CVA's Cascade bolt-action centerfire rifle in 7mm 08, also Silencer Central's Banish 30 suppressor, compatible with your rifle calibers from 17 up to 300 Weatherby, and a $500 gift certificate to True Timber. First prize is a $500 gift certificate to True Timber. You can do all sorts of bonus stuff going on. You can go to gundelio.com for details and the latest on that as well, gundelio.com. Also, First Person Defender is running, and the guns and gear, the new seasons are airing. Let's see. Watch all the seasons at guntalktv.com. That's guntalktv.com. Also on Gun Talk's Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, Android TV, iOS app, frankly, anywhere you can get video, you can probably find Gun Talk. YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Sportsman Channel, of course. We've got the airing over there. A lot of things going on. We've got an Amazon shop for Gun Talk. Just go to guntalk.com. You can kind of land there and go anywhere you need to go. Pretty cool. Now, I mentioned going to the range yesterday. Had some fun. It was kind of an old school day. We did have some polymer pistols, but mostly I took three revolvers,
and a lever action. I actually thought I was taking four revolvers. But when I opened one of the boxes, the blue box, it wasn't the Python. I thought I brought the Python, popped it open, and it was a 9mm 1911. Okay, well, that's kind of old school, too. So I had the Smith & Wesson 686, 7-shot 357. And then I had a Smith & Wesson 624, an older double-action 44 Special 3-inch barrel. All the revolvers were 3-inch barrel. And a new Smith & Wesson 44 Mag 3-inch barrel. And then we had the 1911, and that's when it was fun because we had Nick, the 12-year-old, with us. He had never shot a 1911, so I got it in his hand, showed him what to do, showed him the thumb safety, how it worked, you know, put the magazine in, how to rack the slide, do the whole deal. And he's a good athlete. He was a catcher. He plays catcher, and so he's got skills, and he's also smart. And just showed him a little bit about the stance, and he's leaning into it and shooting a nice little group. Yeah, okay, it was a little bit low and left, big deal. That's correctable, right? And I said, well, yeah, I'm thinking, well, we'll see how he likes it, because he shot some other pistols, and he has a .22 he likes a lot. So he shot that a little bit, came back, and was shooting some other guns. And I said, well, Nick, you want to shoot some more? What do you want to shoot? He reached over and pointed at that 1911 and touched that. Says, I want to shoot that some more. And I'm thinking, this guy's got some good taste. So he is out there just wanging away. And this is a full-size, all-steel 1911 in 9mm. And if there is a sweeter shooting platform, I don't know what it would be, honestly. Because there's not a lot of recoil. The one thing I did have to do, we had a couple of stovepipes. And we figured out that he just didn't have enough mass behind it to get him to bend over, break at the waist, get the nose over the toes, lean into it, and put some, you know, weight behind it, and that stopped that problem. But you got to have some resistance for it. But it was great fun. And then we shot the 44 Specials in both the 44 revolvers. And then I broke out that Marlin 1894 in 44 Mag and shot the 44 Special in that. And that's like just... It's kind of like shooting a 38 Special in a 357 Magnum or lever action. And it makes a noise, but there's no recoil. I did shoot some 44 Mag in it, and that's a little bit more, but even that is nothing. And when you shoot it, you realize this is such a trim little rifle, and it's so capable. And I was kind of having the thought, thinking, you know, I would have no problem whatsoever using a 44 Magnum lever action for deer and probably figure it to be a 100-yard, just pick a number, 100-yard rifle for deer with good bullets, of course, using good stuff. Oh, we also shot some of the Black Hills ammo Honey Badger in it because it just... And this was I didn't have 44 Mag, although they do load that. I had 44 Special Honey Badgers, 100, if I remember right, 125 grain bullets. You talk about no recoil. And I would hunt deer with that in a heartbeat. Just cool stuff. So, you know, just really, really fun stuff out at the range. So that was cool. Hey, Maurice, don't go anywhere. I'm going to get to you. We'll talk about lever actions and revolvers. And also, we've got some open lines if you want to join us. Our number is 866-TALK-GUN. And in just a little bit, we're going to be talking about a new trigger for a different kind of gun and basically ways for you to upgrade your guns to make them more shootable and, frankly, more fun. Our number here, 866-TALK-GUN. Give me a holler, and we'll do exactly that. Talk guns. And actually, during the break, Jim and I are talking about guns. He's building another one. Because we always need just one more. Hey, let's go talk with Maurice. He's in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Maurice, what's on your mind?
Oh, man, you hit it right on the head when you talked about levers and wheel guns. My very first gun, I was 18 years old, working at a music store, and down the street was a Sears and Roebuck. It had a... a 1967 Winchester Canadian Centennial rifle, and I fell in love with it. It took 2 weeks of paychecks to buy it at $129. At that time, you could buy lever guns all day long for under $50. But
right,
and I still have the gun. I still have it. And over the years, I've kind of gravitated back to, especially in the last few years, going back to traditional, pistols and rifles. Mm-hmm. I've got several lever guns. Most of them are in 22. I've got mm-hmm. the old Marlin 22 lever. I think it's what they call Model 65. That thing's a tack driver. And then I've got a Henry that I like a lot. But, you know, it's hard to find levers. Winchester kind of backed out of the business. Marlin was out of business for a while. Henry, I understand half their plant was shut down for COVID.
Yep.
So it's me trying to get back to buying lever. Now, I'll tell you what I did do. I was able to enhance my wheel gun collection. My wife bought me a Smith & Wesson 500.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, and it's not that bad to shoot. You know, it really isn't.
No, it's not.
It's a big old gun.
So let me ask you, do you specialize, do you stay with double-action revolvers, or do you have any single-actions?
I don't have any single-actions. Matter of fact, everything I have is either Ruger or Smith, and they're all double-action. At one time, I was a big Thompson Center contender shooter.
Right.
You know, with the big barrels of 30-30s and 35 Remingtons, and I was shooting Silhouette. But I don't know. I love the feel. It's one of the things I love on 1911. That's my favorite pistol. But it's a Remington. It's a steel gun. It's not aluminum. It's got a great feel in your hand. I love the feel of the metal and stuff in the wheel guns versus the plastic and polymers. And then as far as the lever actions, you can shoot a lever action fairly fast. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's got me looking back towards lever guns again is all this crap, excuse my French, going on in Washington about gun bans.
Right.
They're not talking much about levers, but they're talking about anything that's in a semi-automatic action. And you and I both know a Remington 742 doesn't shoot any different than an AR-15. You pull the trigger once and shoots once.
Yep. Exactly right. And of course, and Jim points out, he says, you know, yet is the operative word. They're not talking about lever actions yet. So, yes, but they do want to. And for those who haven't figured it out, they do, in fact, they're calling now for banning everything that's semi-auto. Everything that's semi-auto. Rifles, pistols, and shotguns. And a lot of the bills, they're saying, well, it's an assault weapon ban. And some of our guys just don't pay attention to it. They go, oh, well, I don't have any of those. Yeah, you do. If you have a semi-automatic anything, because the way they write it, the regs would ban anything that has a semi-automatic action that can take a detachable magazine. That would be, oh, yes, every pistol practically made, as well as a lot of rifles, as well as an awful lot of shotguns. And sometimes they even leave off the whole detachable magazine, so it becomes every semi-auto. Yeah, they want them all. So, yes, it's a great idea to think about buying lever actions. They're a great home defense gun. It's a great fun gun. But at the same time, you also got to make a little bit of a commitment, spend a little bit of money, get involved in some Second Amendment support group, Second Amendment Foundation, your state group, whatever it happens to be. That's kind of the prerequisite. You got to be doing that. That's a baseline investment in being able to hold on to your guns. All right, 866-TALK-GUN. When we come back, we'll be talking about, well, hunting, a lot of cool things with one of my good buddies. I'm Tom Gresham. We'll be right back with more Gun Talk.